Okay, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to UIWU and to our Sabbath morning scripture study. I appreciate you being with us this morning. Thank you very much. We are in our seventh class on our prophet series, and I want to begin today with something a little bit different. I want to continue, obviously, with the prophet study. But beginning this week, I intend to take things a little bit deeper. In other words, one of the things that I want to do is to begin to show the complexity or the intricate aspects of studying the Bible. And I believe that this group that joins in every Sabbath to study with me is quite capable. I've often said that I feel many times that I'm teaching to teachers. But I did want to share some things that I believe that are especially relevant when we talk about studying the Bible, particularly studying the prophets. I think there are some things that people miss, quite a few things that people miss, and I believe that there are a number of reasons that this is so. The first is obvious. The first is that most people, or I should say many people, probably most people, don't really study the Bible. They might read it, they might participate in some sort of program in church or synagogue, but I'm talking about really actually digging into the text and studying the text. And so I began to think about this, and one of the things that I feel is that it's necessary to show some method, if you will, some method. How do we really understand what these prophecies are about? How do we put things together, if you will? And so I want to begin to go over some of these things. Now, not only is the problem that people don't study, because there are people who do study and they still miss things. So even among those people who really do dig in, who really do attempt to study, they miss some things in the text. And this, there are several reasons for that. The first and probably the foremost is that people rely on translations that are not good, some poor translations. And I'm not going to single any particular translation out, but I will say that this applies across the board. It's both Christian as well as Jewish translations. A lot of the English translations that we have are just simply not accurate in terms of getting us close to what the text actually says. And there are a lot of things that we'll talk about on that. Another reason that I think people don't really understand the Bible is they take things out of context. They look at a particular text and they bring to the text certain preconceived ideas, certain presuppositions, certain theologies, certain things that someone may have told them, or maybe a footnote in their study Bible. They depend on that and they don't really look at what the text is saying. So there are all sorts of reasons that a person would take a text out of context. Very important that we stick with context. And probably the thing that I'll focus on most today, and what I find to be probably the most useful tool in our arsenal, if you will, or in our toolbox, is the ability to look at key words and phrases and to begin to search those particular words and phrases out, see where else they're used in a particular chapter, a book, or the Bible as a whole. So we're going to begin to work through some of those things. Now, I will say that those are all issues that hold us back from understanding the Scripture, but I don't want to gloss over the fact that the prophets do contain, when I say prophets, I mean from Moses all the way through Malachi, you might say, and I'm referring to the prophets as a whole and not the Nevi'im section of Scripture so much, but the prophets. And one of the things that I see is that people have to recognize there are some things which are simply sealed. There are things within Scripture that are, to use a word that might raise a few eyebrows, that are secret. For instance, Deuteronomy 29:29 says, "The secret things belong unto Jehovah, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and to our children and so forth. So there are those elements, and we get this throughout Scripture. You know, we read that the book is sealed, for instance. We've talked about this in previous classes. Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 16, there's mention of seal to the Torah and the testimony. Seal the Torah among my disciples or my learnings, as the case might be. Isaiah chapter 29, verses 11 and 12, which we've also covered, describe this book which is sealed that is brought to someone who knows how to read, and he says, I can't understand it because it's sealed, and someone who doesn't, and so forth. So you get these texts, and then, of course, you have four passages in the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 8, verse 17. I'm going through these quickly. Daniel chapter 8, verse 26 also mentions the sealing up until the end. You have Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, and Daniel chapter 12, verse 9. All of these four passages in Daniel speak of a sealing for an indeterminate period of time, until the right time. So we do have text which, despite our attempts to understand them, there will be passages which just evade our understanding. So we have to remember that as well. But we'll look for those. For instance, the passages that I just spoke of may give us an indication as to how long that sealing is to go on. And within the greater context, do we find clues as to when the seal might be broken? But we'll get into that later. So I wanted to start today's class with a little exercise. And I want you to go with me first thing this morning to Jeremiah, to the book of Jeremiah, chapter 23. And I hope you're ready this morning, because we're going to go through a lot of text and we're going to bring up a lot of points so that you and the people that are listening to me are on the same page, that you literally begin to learn how to associate these prophecies so that we get a better picture of what they're saying. So go with me to Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 20. 23 and verse 20. The anger of Jehovah shall not return until he is executed, until he has performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days, you shall consider it perfectly. So one of the points that I wanted to bring up is you do have situations where people just simply don't study, or they bring certain preconceived ideas to the text. You have text which are sealed. And you also have text which we may not understand completely until, as Jeremiah describes it in 23:20, until the Akarit Hayamim, the latter days. Now, look with me at Jeremiah chapter 30. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 24. Jeremiah 30 and verse 24. And it says, the fierce anger of Jehovah shall not turn back until he has done it, until he has performed the intents of his heart. In the latter days, you shall understand this. Sounds very similar to what I just read in Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 20. So this is exercise number one. I want you to go with me. Well, we'll do that in just a minute. First, I want to begin with a couple of questions. Both of these texts speak of the anger of Jehovah. They speak of the intentions of his heart. Now, what I will do when I'm preparing a class or when I'm doing a personal study is I begin to look for key words and phrases. In this particular passage, it uses the Hebrew charon, the charon of Jehovah. Now, we're talking about the fierce anger of Jehovah. This phrase, charon, this word charon in association with the divine name, with Yehovah, is used 9 times in Scripture. So if I want to understand this contextually, I want to look at something, and it says that in the latter days you'll understand this. Well, first of all, what's it saying that we'll understand in the latter days? Well, it's talking about this anger. So if I want to understand this, I want to look at phrases and words and look at every occurrence. Now, I promise you that this class is going to go pretty quickly, but it's going to go deep as well. So be ready. So the first thing I would do here is I would look at this particular phrase, and I would begin to look at other phrases around it. And I'll let you know that charon 2 times in the book of Numbers appears. I'm not going to go through this. This really isn't my class. I'm just laying out an illustration. 5 times in the book of Jeremiah, 1 time in Zephaniah, and 1 time in 2 Chronicles. Now, what I would begin to do in this particular scenario, in this study, is look at each of these and see if there's anything in one that might help me understand the other. And quite often, those of you who've been around me when I study, you'll notice that I begin to make charts on paper. I'll draw out this, you know, it's mentioned in these passages, and over here we read this, and so forth. The reason I'm bringing this up is to prepare you for what's coming in a few moments. By carefully studying the various occurrences where a word or phrase occurs, a picture begins to emerge. The details between these passages begin to converge to provide a true and whole meaning of a word, a phrase, a context, and so forth. So I want to take it now, and I want to begin to look at a particular topic. This topic, as an example, we're going to look at, are you familiar with the phrase pericope? A pericope is a piece that's cut out, a section of text. Now, quite often when I teach, you'll hear me talk about the white spaces. The white spaces contain pericopes. They contain sections of text which go together. They don't always coincide, and quite often they don't coincide with our English chapter and verses. So you will many times get things mixed up because people begin in a certain chapter when that section actually begins prior to the English section. So let's go back to Jeremiah chapter 23, Jeremiah 23, and earlier I read Jeremiah 23:20. But Jeremiah 23:20 is part of a larger section of text. It actually begins in verse 19. Now listen as I read Jeremiah 23:19. The section runs through verse 22. Behold the storm wind of Jehovah. Fury has gone forth, a whirling tempest. It shall fall upon the head of the wicked. The anger of Jehovah shall not return until he is executed, until he has performed the thoughts of his heart. In the latter days you shall consider it perfectly. I have not sent these prophets, yet they ran. I have not spoken to them, yet they prophesied. But if they had stood in my counsel, then they should have caused my people to hear my words and turned from their evil way and from the evil of their doings. Now, this particular passage begins with a reference to the storm of Jehovah, Sa'arat, the storm wind, I think it's translated here. This particular passage is one of two passages where this storm wind is mentioned. Now, go with me back to Jeremiah chapter 30. We just read Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 23, but now I want to read it in context. Jeremiah 30, this time I want to begin in verse 23 at the white space. The section we're concerned with runs from verse 23 through verse 25. Now, some of you are going to look at your English Bible right now and say, I don't have a verse 25. You probably don't in an English Bible. This is why it's important to follow the white spaces. So Jeremiah 30, verse 23, listen to this. Behold, the storm wind of Jehovah goes out with fury and sweeping storm. It shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked. The fierce anger of Jehovah shall not turn back until he has done it, and until he has performed the intents of his heart. In the latter days you shall understand this. At that time, says Jehovah, will I be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. White space. Now, if you're in the English Bible and you don't have the white spaces, you're going to miss something. You're going to miss something very important. The phrase, at that time, says Jehovah, will I be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. That, in many Bibles, in English Bibles, is Jeremiah 31, verse 1. So many people will look at this, and what they'll do is they won't associate that this covenanting will take place in a time of trouble. You see my point? Because if you read in context, you have the storm wind going out, the wicked being punished, the fierce anger, and then it says, and at that time. At what time? In the time of all this trouble. But most people, because of an English translation that doesn't follow the white spaces, will put that at the beginning of chapter 31, verse 1. After this white space, 31:1 says, in the Hebrew, thus says Jehovah, the people who were left of the sword found grace in the wilderness, and so forth. It's a different thought. Talking about a time of trouble or recovenanting, then there's a white space. This is important, and the reason that I covered that initially this morning is to stress a very important point. People often have used this phrase, the devil is in the details. Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, the devil is not in the details. To the contrary, Jehovah's truth, as recorded b'yad nevi'im, by the hand of the prophets, by the hand of his messengers, is in the details. And if we're going to understand the prophets, we have to begin to associate like texts together based on words and phrases, and we also have to begin to look at these sections of the prophets in order to fully comprehend what it is that we are looking into. Go with me this morning to the book of Malachi. To the book of Malachi. And I want to go to Malachi 3:1. Malachi 3:1. Behold, I send my messenger, and he shall clear the way before me. And the Lord, in Hebrew, that is Adon, it's not the divine name. And the Adon whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, and the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, says Jehovah of hosts. Now that's a lot to unpack in this one verse. What we're looking at is we're looking at a description of something which is to come. So today's illustration, the class today, is on the messenger, but it's sort of a primer, if you will. It's the method whereby we understand and we begin to study to identify who this messenger is. Okay? So it says, "Behold, I send my messenger." Very important for us to know in this passage. Who is speaking? Who is speaking? Because whoever is speaking is saying that they, the speaker, will be sending a messenger. The first of all, this verse is not the beginning of this prophetic utterance. This prophetic section, if I want to really understand, and we're not going to have time to go through this entire exercise today, but if I really want to understand who is sending the messenger and who the messenger is, I first of all have to understand contextually everything around it. All right? So this section actually begins in Malachi chapter 2, verse 17, and runs all the way through Malachi 3, verse 12. These verses go together. So Malachi 2:17 through 3:12 go together. There is a lot in this section of text. There's a lot to unpack, more than we can even think about today. But let's say we wanted to study and understand what the prophets mean, or what Malachi means, particularly here, with who is the messenger. Now, look, I know a lot of you are wanting to get ahead of me, and you're going to probably be saying, oh, look here, look here, look here. Stick with me on this, if you would, because I want to show a couple of things that you may or may not know that will help you in this particular study. So let's say we want to study the messenger, which, by the way, I do, okay? One needs to unpack this in section, this entire section, the context, the speaker, the details, and so forth. So I'm going to read a part of it. I want you to follow me beginning in chapter 2, verse 17 of Malachi. All right, and we're only going to read a part. We're going to read through verse 7 of chapter 3. "You have wearied Jehovah with your words. Yet you say, 'And what have we wearied him?' When you say, 'Everyone that does evil is good in the sight of Jehovah, and he delights in them,' or, 'Where is the God of judgment?' Behold, I send my messenger." Notice this same section of text. "And he will clear the way before me, and the Lord, Adon, whom you seek, shall suddenly come to his temple. And the messenger of the covenant, whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, says Jehovah of hosts. But who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire, and like the washer's soap. He shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them like gold and silver, that they may offer to Jehovah an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant to Jehovah, as in the days of old, as in former years. And I will come near to you in judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and the adulterers and against false swearers and against those who oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow, the fatherless, and who turn aside the stranger from his right. And fear not me, says Jehovah of hosts, for I am Jehovah. I do not change. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed. Therefore, from the days of your fathers, you've turned aside from my ordinances and have not kept them. Return to me, and I'll return to you, says Jehovah of hosts." Okay, I read a lot there. You can see how there's a lot to unpack. I'm curious about the messenger. But all around the messenger, all around the mention of someone sending the messenger.
I don't know how to respond to.
Siri's trying to respond to that. Well, Siri, just stick tight. I'll get back to you. All around this particular passage are details which will help us in identifying and understanding this particular passage. So again, the first thing we want to ask is, who's speaking? Who says, "Behold, I will send my messenger"? Whose messenger is this? The end of verse 1 says, Jehovah of hosts, says Jehovah of hosts. So you go, well, there it is. Okay. Now look down at chapter 3, verse 3. And the second part of that verse says, that they may offer to Jehovah an offering in righteousness. Now, is Jehovah speaking here? Up prior, it said, Jehovah, thus says Jehovah of hosts. But here it says that they may offer to Jehovah an offering in righteousness. Does Jehovah say they will offer to Jehovah? It seems more likely that Jehovah would say they will offer to me. So who's speaking here? Now look down at verse 5. And I will come near to you in judgment. And I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and so forth. Who does that sound like? Well, it seems like that's something that only Jehovah could say, right? Look down at verse 6. Verse 6 says, "For I am Jehovah, I do not change." That's an easy one, right? Look down at verse 7. "Return to me, and I will return to you, says Jehovah of hosts." So what we have here is a particular passage where within the text, beginning in chapter 2, verse 17, it goes all the way through chapter 3, verse 12, we have a mysterious switching back and forth, where at times the speaker is saying, "Thus says Jehovah." At other times, the speaker is speaking quite possibly the word of Jehovah, but not on behalf of Jehovah. Does that make sense? So at times what you have here is you have the words of the prophet. At other times, you have the word of Jehovah. Okay? So let's say that it is Jehovah of hosts who is going to send his messenger, because that's what I think this text is saying. Who is a messenger? How will we recognize this messenger? What is it that the messenger will accomplish? Now, Malachi gives us some of this information, but my question would be, we're going to look at what Malachi tells us about the messenger. But do we get other clues, other hints, other text, other words of Jehovah that give us more information so that we might be able to identify the identity of the messenger? Now, this works, by the way, with all sorts of other figures, redemptive figures. If we talk about the servant, if we talk about we'll give you quite a few examples in other classes. Right now, I'm just dealing with the messenger. We want to know who is the messenger and what will this messenger's task be. Okay? It's very important. So do the prophets outside of Malachi give us other indications? So let's go back, and let's go back at chapter 3, verse 1. Chapter 3 and verse 1 of Malachi. "Behold, I send my messenger, and he shall clear the way before me, and the Adon," the Lord, Adon, it's not the divine name, "the Adon whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple, and the messenger of the covenant, whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, says Jehovah of hosts. Now this opens up some interesting things about the messenger. So the first thing I want to say is don't get ahead of me if you can stand it, because I want to take this very methodically. We're going to come back to this particular phrase, he shall prepare the way before me. So we're going to look at that in just a second. This particular verse, for the sake of illustration, I only want to look at Malachi 3:1 for a moment. I'm excluding the rest of the greater context dealing with the messenger. You have the verse that I just read. That verse is also divided. In the Hebrew, now, I know I'm going into a little bit more than I usually do, but this is important to make my point. In the Hebrew, there is what we call a disjunctive accent mark, and it's called an athnak. If you are a student of Hebrew, this looks like a wishbone. That's the shape of it. And what this does is it divides the text at a logical midpoint. So when I'm studying, not only am I looking at the greater context between the white spaces, but if I'm looking at a particular subject, in this case, I want to identify the messenger, I want to look at the details very, very closely. So here we have in verse 1, this particular passage, and it begins, And he shall prepare the way before me. And right under the word before me in Hebrew is a break within the verse. Like that, what goes to the first part of that verse is, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And it's got the disjunctive accent, meaning that's one section within the verse. Okay? Now, after that, listen to what we have. And suddenly, he shall come to his, hekal in Hebrew can mean palace or temple. He. And suddenly, he shall come to his palace or temple. The Adon whom you are seeking and the messenger whom you delight in. Behold, he is coming, says Jehovah of hosts. The second part of that one verse is packed. The reason I want to show you these things is because I want to begin to illustrate for you the complexity of these prophetic words. So if we were to divide this single verse based upon this disjunctive accent, everything which I just said, he's going to suddenly come to his temple, the Adon whom you are seeking and the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in, behold, he is coming, says Jehovah of hosts. Here's some questions that I have when I'm studying. Is the Adon the messenger? Okay? Or are they separate? What about the messenger of the covenant that's mentioned in this second part? Is the messenger of the covenant the same as the Adon, and are the messenger of the covenant, the Adon, and the messenger in the first part of verse 1, are they all the same? Does that make sense? Do all of these descriptors apply to the same figure, or is it more than one? We're not going to go any deeper at this particular point, but I want you to see this as we begin to look at the prophetic text, because over the course of our study, we're going to begin to talk about various figures. And, you know, a lot of people talk about texts in the Bible which are messianic, and they apply all of these different texts, like the branch. Who is the branch? Is the branch the Messiah? You know, because in Christianity and Judaism, by the way, a lot of people put a lot of these different eschatological end times figures into a single grouping and say, that's the Messiah. But the text doesn't call it. So, for instance, when we're studying the Messiah, when we're studying the messenger, let's not say that the messenger is the Messiah. Let's commit to only using the terms and phrases that the Bible use. That way, we'll be able to keep it straight. Now, everybody take a deep breath. I know I'm putting a lot out there, but I want you to now look at chapter 3 of Malachi, verse 1, first part of the verse. Okay? This is the way I study. I want you to see this so that you can kind of get a feel for the method to the madness, I guess you might say. So let's take it slowly. Here we go. Chapter 3, verse 1, first part of the verse before the disjunctive accent. All we have is this. Behold, I send my messenger, and he shall clear the way before me. Okay. Jehovah is speaking. Jehovah is going to send his messenger before him, before Jehovah. The messenger has a task that we read here, to prepare the way before him. Now, there's a lot of questions just in that, but we'll leave that aside for a moment. We are dealing with one half of one single verse that should be easy. This should be easy. We're not even taking into consideration all the other things. Remember, this section runs from chapter 2, verse 17 of Malachi, all the way to chapter 3, verse 12. You know how many details we have to break out to really study? Somebody asked me, how long is this study going to go on? I said, I don't know, maybe 1,000 years. We've got time. We've got details to dig out. I am sending my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me. Now, within that single one half of one verse in a greater section in Malachi, we have to ask the question, what do we know about the messenger that Jehovah is going to send? We'll look at the other part of this in just a moment. By the way, remember, I want to refrain from saying that this messenger is the Messiah or anything like that. Don't use that term. What we are referring to here is Malachi, my messenger. And that's it. That's all we know. The Hebrew Malachi is translated my messenger. Malach is a messenger. Malachi in Hebrew means the messenger of me, or my messenger. Now, go with me to Malachi 1. Malachi 1, verse 1. The burden of the word of Jehovah to Israel by Malachi, by my messenger. See, we typically, most people, because the book is called Malachi or Malachi, the book is called Malachi, and so what people assume is that this book is written by a prophet by the name of Malachi. That's what most people think. But we have to question that. We have to think about this. Is Malachi a name? Or, in other words, why is it in verse 1 of chapter 1, the word of Jehovah to Israel by Malachi, Why is it transliterated there, meaning it's just the Hebrew is brought into English and not translated? But in chapter 3, verse 1, it is. It is translated to my messenger. In other words, you could read chapter 3, verse 1 like this. Behold, I send Malachi. It's the same Hebrew. Behold, I'm sending Malachi. And he shall clear the way before me. Was Malachi clearing the way before me? Conversely, you can read chapter 1, verse 1, the burden of the word of Jehovah to Israel by my messenger. You follow that? Okay. Now, I want you to go to chapter 2 of Malachi, and let's go to verse 4. Now, again, I'm only reading a section of a section. If I wanted to get the full understanding, I would need to begin and follow the spacing. I would begin in chapter 1, verse 1, and read all the way through chapter 2, verse 12. But I'm just concerned with making a single point at this point. So go with me to chapter 2, verse 4. And I'm going to read through verse 7, Malachi 2, 4. And you shall know that I have sent this commandment to you, that my covenant might be with Levi, says Jehovah of hosts. My covenant was with him for life and peace, and I gave them to him for the fear with which he feared me. He was afraid of my name. The Torah of truth was in his mouth, and iniquity was not to be found on his lips. He walked with me in peace and uprightness and turned many away from iniquity. For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, that they should seek Torah at his mouth. For he is the messenger of Jehovah of hosts. But he is the messenger of Jehovah of hosts. Who is the messenger of Jehovah of hosts? Here, in context, it's talking, verse 7, about the Kohen, about the priest, right? So can we then assume that, at least based on this particular text, that this particular messenger, the one who is referred to in Malachi as the messenger, if we're looking for an identity, will he be a Levite? Will he be a priest? You see how things begin to come together. You say, well, let me look at this. It says very clearly, it's talking in context about a Levite, about a Kohen is even mentioned here, and it says, for he is the Malach. So now, let's think about this. Go back to chapter 3 and look at verse 3b, the second part of verse 3. It says, talking about the messenger maybe, and he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them like gold and silver that they may offer to Jehovah an offer in righteousness. Ah, so are we talking? That would make sense then. If we just read that the messenger is associated with the Levites, it seems natural that this messenger will purify the sons of Levi. Does that make sense? You see where I'm going? Okay. Now, so with these thoughts in mind, understanding that we're only going to scratch the surface with this today, let's take this a little bit further. The messenger of 3:1a in Malachi is going to prepare the way before me. Now, I want to look at this particular phrase. This is the way I would study this, because remember, I want to figure out who this messenger is. First of all, I have an idea that whoever the messenger is, the messenger of Jehovah, that Jehovah of hosts is sending, I have an idea that I'm going to just put in a column and say, quite possibly Levitical. Quite possibly Levitical. And then I begin to list out a few reasons why I think that. But I want to now look at the phrase, prepare the way before me, because here's something that's clear. The messenger that Jehovah of hosts is sending will prepare the way. Panu Derek. So if I can look for that phrase in Scripture, quite possibly it will give me more information on the messenger and on the task of the messenger. So I might get more about the identity, but I'll certainly understand more fully what to expect of this messenger, whoever the messenger will be. I can look at, so if somebody says, behold, he's there, or behold, he's there, I can say, you know, I don't know what that particular person is, but they're not the messenger. But on the other hand, if things that I've identified from the prophets are taking place, like a checklist, I can go, well, I tell you what, this person has done in order steps 1, 2, and 3 that's expected, and therefore the likelihood of this being, you see why we would do this. We want to know. Okay, I want you to go with me now. We're looking at the phrase Panu Derek. Let's now go to the book of Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 40. Now, many of you know this, but Isaiah 40, many scholars believe that this is written by someone other than the Isaiah of Hezekiah's time and so forth. They believe that this begins what many scholars call Second Isaiah, Deutero-Isaiah. And the reason, one of the main reasons they came to this is that it's so different. When you hit chapter 40, verse 1 of Isaiah, it's like a different book, if you ever really study it. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 1 begins, Nachmu, 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 Ami, comfort ye, it's plural, comfort ye, my people. And then it goes on. So something, there's a transition, if you will. Whether it's a different author or not, it's another issue. There is a transition in Isaiah chapter 40, which puts things clearly in the latter days, if you will. So I want to look at verse 3, Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 3. You ready? A voice cries, prepare in the wilderness the way of Jehovah. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Now, in this particular passage, notice it says, a voice cries. It does not say, a voice will cry. It does not say, a voice cried. It says, kol Kore, a voice is crying. In this particular verb form, it indicates a continued state of activity. What does that mean? It means if you're quiet, you can hear the voice now. It's not talking about an event that's going to happen. It's not talking about an event that already happened. It's saying a voice is crying in the wilderness. Now, here's something else. It doesn't say a voice cries, prepare in the wilderness. What? A voice is crying in the wilderness. Where is the voice? The voice is in the wilderness. The voice is crying in the wilderness. What's the voice saying? Panu Derek Yehovah. Prepare the way of Jehovah. Okay. A lot to unpack here. I want you to understand this, though. Who is the voice? Who is the voice? Whoever the voice is, here's what we know about the voice. The voice is crying Our cries is okay. It's a continued state of activity. A voice cries in the wilderness, Panu Derek Yehovah, prepare the way of Jehovah. I don't know whose voice it is. Who is the person who's saying, prepare the way of Jehovah? There's a lot to unpack here. But we got here. We have to stay focused. We got here because we're looking at the messenger of Malachi 3:1, whose task it is to prepare the way. The messenger of Malachi 3:1 has a task, one task that we know of. You might say, well, he's also to build the Heikal, the temple, the palace of Jehovah. He's also to do this. Let's keep it simple. Let's stay focused. We know Malachi 3:1a says, behold, I am sending, or I will send my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me. Now, here we are in Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 3, and it says that a voice is crying in the wilderness, Panu Derek Yehovah. Panu Derek Yehovah. A voice is crying. Now, it's interesting that the voice crying in the wilderness is saying the same mission as the messenger in Malachi 3:1a. But notice here, it doesn't say the messenger. It just says that a voice is crying. So then we have to put in our column of things to investigate. Isaiah uses a voice over and over. Is that voice always, if I can associate the messenger of Malachi 3 with the voice in Isaiah chapter 40, then elsewhere in Isaiah where it mentions the voice, do I then make that association too? I don't want to get ahead of myself, but is it something to consider? Yes, it is something to consider. The voice, who is the voice? Now, do we know anymore? Let's look at chapter 40, verse 3 through 5, because this is the white space. This is the section of text that contains that verse, Isaiah 40, verse 3 through 5. Here it is, the entire snip, the pericope together. A voice is crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of Jehovah, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted, every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain, and the glory of Jehovah shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of Jehovah has spoken it. Now, do we know where the preparation of the way of Jehovah begins now? In the desert. In the desert. Bamidbar. So we have the messenger of Malachi chapter 3, verse 1. The voice in Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 3 is saying, prepare the way, just as the messenger in Malachi 3:1a is supposed to say. And now we see that the messenger of Malachi 3:1a, being associated here with Isaiah 40, verse 3, is going to begin the preparation of the way of Jehovah in the desert. And then there's mention of a highway. What is the highway? We have to stay focused, so we'll look at that later. I'm just going to, it's hard, but we want to just stick with the messenger and preparing the way. Messenger preparing the way. So now we're starting to fill in the details. The messenger and the voice seem to be the same, at least here. The task of the messenger is to prepare the way. The voice in Isaiah 40 is saying, prepare the way. Now, go with me to Isaiah 57. Isaiah 57. And I just want to look at verse 14. Isaiah 57, verse 14. And one shall say, bank up, Build up, it should be. Prepare the way. Take up the stumbling block out of the way of my people. Okay. Prepare the way. Same phrase, panu derech. This particular passage, this single verse, is part of a larger section of text, as you can imagine. It begins in Isaiah 57 and verse 3, and it runs all the way through 57 verse 14. So if you really want to understand contextually, which we're not going to do today, it's too much to unpack, but we're just looking at this particular, this idea of the messenger who is to prepare the way. One shall say, who is this one? Who is the one who shall say, solu, solu, build up, build up? Now, by the way, solu, solu is plural. So build ye up, it's plural. It's whoever the voice is here, the one who's speaking, uses a phrase addressing a group. Build up, y'all, build up. Now, build up what? Solu, solu. I know I'm going into a lot here, but I'm not stopping. Solu, solu in Hebrew, build up, build up. The word for highway that we saw in Isaiah chapter 40 is the same Hebrew word. So there's something being built. Hamsalah is something which is built up. It's translated highway, but is it really a road? Well, we'll talk about that later. But the idea is that this too, not only is connected to Isaiah chapter 40 because of the phrase panu derech, but there's also a building that's going on. Build up, build up. So, the same one who says build up, also says panu derech, the same mission. Now go with me to Isaiah chapter 62 and verse 10. Isaiah 62 and verse 10. And it says, plural, by the way, ivru, ivru, go through, or pass through the gates. Prepare the way of the people. Bank up, build up, build up, build up the highway. Clear the stones. Lift up a standard for the people. Okay. Go through, pass through, build up, build up. Panu derech ha'am, prepare the way of the people. Now, the question becomes, what was the stumbling block that had to be cleared in Isaiah chapter 57, and does that tie in with preparing the way for the people? It does. If you breathe deeply and you think about this, if you were to begin writing this out in columns, you could do four columns, let's say, do four columns on a piece of paper, and in one column, let's say on the left, you put Malachi 3, everything you know about the messenger. And then you put in the next column, Isaiah chapter 40 and what you know, Isaiah 57, everything you know, Isaiah 62, and you will then begin to see what I see and what I'm trying to describe here to understand who the messenger is, to get the information about the messenger's role, and what all is going on at the time. Solu, solu, hamsila, Isaiah 57, verse 14. Now, this particular passage, Isaiah chapter 62, I just read verse 10, but it actually runs through verse 12. Let me just give it to you together. Go through the gates, prepare the way of the people, build up the highway, clear the stones, lift up a standard for the people. And by the way, Isaiah also says a lot about lifting up a standard for the people. So if we took our four column sheet that we began to build, I would also have a note there and say, I know I've seen this. Where else have I seen this? And I would begin to connect that phrase and bring in more so that the picture becomes clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer. This isn't like, it's not just a matter of I understand the Bible. We have to really begin to deeply dive into the text to get the full picture. But here we go. Verse 11, behold, after I set a standard for the people, behold, Jehovah has proclaimed to the end of the world, say to the daughter of Zion, behold, your salvation comes. Behold, his reward is with him, his wages before him, and they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of Jehovah, and you shall be called Derusha, sought out, a city not forsaken. That's the whole section there. Now, I know I'm covering a lot, but I just wanted to give you a taste of the way that we begin to understand the identity, for instance, of the messenger. The messenger may not be mentioned by the title or phrase or name messenger, but we can begin to associate text based on other indicators from other texts. Hopefully that's been pretty clear. To help illustrate this point, I went through several things and I took it a little bit further than I think I usually do. But one thing just to draw your attention to that you should have noticed that might help you begin to really fill this picture in, and I'm not going to leave it here. We're going to take this further in other classes. I just wanted to use this opportunity today to show you the how behind, kind of showing you the math, not just giving you the answer. One point that you should have noticed is that there's this repetition that occurs in the text that we just read, which I find interesting. So, for instance, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 1, where this voice comes in, Nachamu, Nachamu, uses the word twice. Did you catch that? And then when you go to Isaiah 57, you say, Solu, Solu. And then when you get to Isaiah 62, you say, Ivru, Ivru. So here's the voice of the messenger is, you're going to hear this today. If the messenger were speaking today, and you were just able to pull this together, you begin to find the mission of the messenger. And what is it? Comfort ye, comfort ye. Build ye, build ye. Pass ye through, pass ye through. Now we begin to see that there are things that the messenger will do and say that help us to understand more of the identity and more of the mission, if you will. So for an accurate understanding of the prophets, details matter. Today, we only began to scratch just a little bit of the surface. It gets much deeper, but we're not going to have to go through the method each week. But I wanted you to kind of get an idea of how we begin to pull things together so that in the coming weeks, as we study the various eschatological end times figures and so forth, you'll see how do you connect the messenger of Malachi 3, like we did today, with the voice of Isaiah chapter 40. Well, you do it through words and phrases. It gets much deeper. I hope you can join me next week, same time, same channel. Shabbat Shalom.